Zachariah Hughes, and it's 2 minutes after 12 o'clock. Investigators have completed the on-scene investigation into the Hagelin Cessna 208 crash that killed four people and injured six outside St. Mary's on Friday night. NTSB Regional Office Chief Clint Johnson says the investigation is shifting to a recovery operation.
They did everything they possibly could at the site, but obviously because of the remoteness of the site, things are a little limited, so we need to get it back to Anchorage so we can continue the investigation.
NTSB is working with recovery crews on the wreckage to lift it out with a helicopter to the St. Mary's Airport, which will then be loaded onto a plane and taken to a hangar in Anchorage.
Some place that we can lay the airplane out, basically piece all the parts and the pieces back together, determine or confirm that there were no mechanical issues that maybe led to this accident. Right now, we don't know for absolutely sure. Also, we'll be inviting the airframe manufacturer, which in this case is Cessna, and also the engine manufacturer, which in this case is Pratt & Whitney. Invite them to be a part of the investigative team. We'll use their expertise as far as each one of their products.
Johnson emphasizes that investigators don't yet know what caused the plane to crash into the tundra.
We're still very much in the very formative stages of this accident investigation. It's way too early to draw any conclusions.
There were a few witnesses that investigators can interview. So far, they've interviewed two of the surviving six passengers. There were witnesses at St. Mary's Airport who can provide their account on the crash as well. Another critical component is that of weather. The conditions at the time of the crash were reported to be foggy with temperatures in the teens and some reported freezing rain. An NTSB meteorologist has been assigned to the case.
He has, last couple of days, gathered a tremendous amount of information as far as current conditions or conditions at the time of the accident, forecasted conditions, and also after the accident as well. That is an integral part of the investigation, and that part is continuing.
Johnson says the goal is to have a preliminary report published about 5 days after the accident. After that, the complete investigation takes 9 months to a year. If you've been having trouble with AT&T in Nome, you're not the only one.
To report a new trouble, press 1. To obtain status on an existing ticket, press 2. To check the status of an existing ticket, say status.
I would like to talk to an operator or a human.
You want status. Got it.
Nope.
Please hold while I transfer you.
That's not what I asked for at all.
This is AT&T's Trouble Ticket Status System.
Residents have been using internet forums to alert each other about service outages and solicit information. Some customers reported limited phone and messaging service for as long as 9 days. One KNOM effort on Monday to contact AT&T about coverage outages led to Corporate Communications Officer Andy Colley initiating a repair request for stopped network equipment. However, there were multiple reports of coverage problems on Wednesday. As of yesterday evening, some customers in Nome said their full coverage was restored, but with no AT&T representatives in the region, residents have few resources for logging complaints or requesting service fixes. It took KNOM more than 30 minutes of inquiries and calls to get a hold of the company's department in Alaska that handles cellular operations, and then more time to learn that the 2G tower in Nome was experiencing degraded signal coverage. But there was no pre-existing record of any problems in the company's records. At the AT&T transmitter site off Front Street in Nome, there were no visible signs of damage on the satellite dish other than several hanging icicles. No one was inside the building, and a call to the number provided on the door led to a helpline where a representative found no problems had been reported. Tuesday afternoon, Savunga harvested a whale, a 55-foot, 9-inch female bowhead 8 miles northeast of St. Lawrence Island. Over a dozen boats assisted the hunt. After the kill, George Newark, chairman of the Alaska Eskimo Whaling Commission, says that half the community flocked to the beach to help haul the animal ashore. Men and women and children, aided by heavy equipment, heaved the giant mammal from the water. They then began cutting the meat, distributing the food among the community, passing portions to every household, and sending sections to Gamble, the other village on the island. Newark said that every helping hand left carrying a piece of the animal.
Whoever else was there was bringing something back, even children.
The whale comes at a time of need. In August, St. Lawrence Island declared an economic disaster. Thick sea ice had prevented hunters from reaching migrating walruses, and as a result, the island gathered only one-third of its average walrus harvest. Since walruses traditionally serve as the bulk of the island's subsistence intake, a low yield caused an economic and food deficit. The Alaska Community Action on Toxins set up a relief effort for the island with a goal of raising $35,000 by December 1st. But Vai Wari, ACAT Environmental Health and Justice Program Director, says collections have not totaled $10,000. Food donations from across Western Alaska have been made to the island, but the food and economic shortage of Gamble and Savunga continues to dwarf contributions. Nuuk says that hunters have gone out every day searching for birds and marine mammals. A few seals were found for Thanksgiving and shared among the village, but overall, catches have stayed low and food remains expensive. Meanwhile, Nuuk says some households unable to pay their utility bills have had their power and water disconnected, and winter is just beginning. The recent bowhead is Savunga's first whale since April, and the community is permitted one more strike this year, an annual quota set up by the Alaska Whaling Commission. Nuuk says that with winter approaching, residents are hoping sea ice will form and marine mammals will follow, but it's already December and there's no sea ice in sight.
I mean, we're talking about thousands of marine mammals that come every year with sea ice, including bowheads, walrus, seals. So we're hoping that we'll be able to take a few once it comes with the ice. So that's what we're hoping for. That's what we're looking for and waiting for.
For now, there are portions of this whale to share. Residents are still carving and distributing meat from the head of the animal. Nuuk says that this tradition of cooperation is the reason the island, even through times of austerity, has survived.
Fortunately, people tend to share whatever they get, so that's what happens a lot. That's what has kept us survived all these millennia, because cooperating and sharing is key to our survival. So that's the case in this scenario, too. Even with the hardship that we're experiencing right now economically.
To donate monetarily to the St. Lawrence Island relief effort, go to www.akaction.org and click on the banner at the top of the website, or mail checks to ACAT, 505 West Northern Lights Boulevard, Suite 205, Anchorage, Alaska, 99503. To donate dry, non-perishable food to the island, label boxes either to the City of Savunga Relief Effort or to the Native Village of Gamble Relief Effort, then ship the boxes for free via Bering Air. You can also drop donations by the Can-O-Am Studios between 8 a.m. and 5 p.m. this week, and we will deliver them to the airline. The Western Arctic Caribou Herd Working Group is meeting in Anchorage this week. The 20-member group meets every winter to ensure the long-term conservation of the Western Arctic Caribou Herd, the largest caribou herd in North America. Can-O-Am's Lorelei Kinnean reports from Anchorage.
Caribou and Seward Peninsula reindeer. Much of yesterday's discussion at the Western Arctic Caribou Herd Working Group meeting revolved around that. Tom Gray is a member of the working group and represents the Reindeer Herders Association. He asked that the working group support a program to find out more about caribou that summer on the Seward Peninsula. In the past 20 years, a large portion of the Western Arctic caribou herd shifted from wintering in the Nulato Hills and began migrating to the Seward Peninsula instead. Gray says a few years ago, he was shocked to find out there are now caribou that summer in the northern Seward Peninsula.
From the reindeer's side of the coin, we're very curious what's holding caribou on the Seward Peninsula. Is it our reindeer are a magnet for these caribou? Are there reindeer mixed in with them? What's the story?
The resolution for support passed. It states that a determination needs to be made on whether the caribou that oversummer on the Seward Peninsula are reindeer, caribou, or reindeer-caribou hybrids. The resolution asks that the state of Alaska and federal agencies develop a research project to sample the animals. The resolution also asks for radio collars on animals that have spent their summer on the peninsula.
And we need to know what's going on with these animals that are spending the summers there. We can't afford to lose the Kokark herd. We can't afford to lose any other herds. So no matter what the outcome of a DNA study, we're still worried about caribou taking the rest of these animals that are on the peninsula, Seward Peninsula.
Gray says 3/4 of the reindeer population on the Seward Peninsula have been decimated by caribou migration. And with some caribou now spending the summer in the northern Seward Peninsula, Gray says more needs to be understood. If a new herd has been established on the peninsula, reindeer herders need to know that. He says there are up to 5 herds in the area that need protection from caribou. Gray, who once had thousands of reindeer and a very successful business, now has 0, all either taken by wild caribou herds or by predators. Jim Dow has been a biologist with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Kotzebue for nearly 26 years. He says in the past 10 years, there have been 9 collared caribou that have spent summers on the Seward Peninsula. He's seen up to 4,500 animals summering in the area.
Now, if we know we've got caribou that are staying down there, we think it's the same caribou, by all means, we should probably start a new project and just collar animals there. But I'm not sure we're there yet. So from the state side, where we would like to start, as Tom mentioned, is with the genetics project to find out what they are. If we find out there's very few caribou there, it's mostly reindeer or reindeer hybrids, I think Fish and Game is out of the picture.
But Dow says if the animals are caribou, the Department of Fish and Game needs to be involved. And what he needs now are tissue samples from northern Seward Peninsula hunters.
I thought over a good summer I could get enough samples, bam, we're done. But in 3 years I have gotten 0, so we really need help from especially people in Shishmaref to try and get tissue samples. So that's, whether we end up doing the collars or not, I still think that's a critical piece of information. And it's something, that people from Shishmaref can be involved with and participate.
The resolution passed by the Western Arctic Caribou Herd Working Group yesterday states that the Kuwerik Reindeer Herders Association will cooperate and assist researchers in obtaining samples and will assist with placement of satellite collars. But it all comes down to money and who and what agency will fund the research program. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Lorelei Kinnean.
And checking in New York, the price of gold is down $16.70 to $1,226.60 an ounce. Silver is down 30 cents to $19.42 an ounce. And zinc is at 85 cents a pound. Alaska Airlines Flight 152 has a slight delay and will be arriving in Nome at 12:57. And Flight 151 will depart from Nome at 1:32. Unofficially, it's 33 degrees right now outside the KNOM studios, 15 minutes after 12 o'clock.